There's an outpouring of support tonight for the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department after the death of Officer David Lee. He was struck and killed this morning while responding to an accident on Interstate 70.
Now, First Alert 4 is confirming through multiple sources tonight the name of the person detained in this deadly crash. According to court records, the 24-year-old is currently on probation for a previous domestic assault and DWI charge in St. Charles County. Those same court records say police say that he was living in the country illegally at the time of his last arrest. We are not naming him at this point because no charges have officially been filed.
Well, I think we're naming him. This is a really, really horrible story from over the weekend. Officer David Lee, this is a St. Louis police officer. He's 44 years old and was hit on Interstate 70. KMOV, firstalert4.com, if you haven't seen the story on this. That audio that we just played there was from KMOV's report on this, and props to them for discussing this. But since then, we know that this incident includes Ramon Chavez Rodriguez. And we're going to start our conversation here with our friend Will Scharf, who, of course, you know him as a former federal prosecutor for the Eastern District of Missouri. He's a Donald Trump attorney. You know a little bit about this, and this is going to turn into quite a big story due to the details of the matter. An officer, a St. Louis police officer, is dead because of this man. What do we know about Chavez Rodriguez?
Yeah, so first of all, you know, my heart goes out to Officer Lee's family, his friends, to everybody who knew him. I never worked with him personally when I was in the U.S. Attorney's Office here, but I worked with officers who knew him well and who did work with him. This is a guy, the sort of guy who's just the backbone of the police department. Absolutely solid police officer, deeply committed and dedicated to serving the community. This is a tragic circumstance, and it's made all the more tragic because it was a completely preventable situation. What happened here is that yesterday morning at about 8:30 a.m., Officer Lee was responding to a single vehicle traffic accident while he was putting out traffic cones. An illegal immigrant who was drunk at the wheel at 8:30 in the morning on Sunday morning collided with him, hit him, and ended up taking his life. The illegal immigrant is a guy from Honduras. His name is Ramon Arnaldo Chavez Rodriguez. I think we should all say his name and remember his name. He is an illegal immigrant from Honduras. The press is reporting that he had a prior for a domestic incident and for a DUI. What they're not reporting yet, and I know this because I pulled the case record off of CaseNet earlier, is that that incident, which occurred in October of 2020, involved him kicking in his girlfriend's door while drunk, beating her to within an inch of her life, then kidnapping her baby, throwing the baby in a car, driving away, almost running the girlfriend over when she tried to prevent him from driving away. He's then arrested by the police. He admits that he was drunk. He admits to basically everything that happened. And then because we have a dysfunctional court system here in the state of Missouri, this case is rolled for the better part of 2 years. He bonds out immediately, never serves a day in prison. And then in January of 2022, despite these alleged crimes being absolutely heinous, and despite it being a seemingly open and shut case, he pleads to an SIS, a suspended imposition of a sentence, meaning that no criminal record was actually given to him. He didn't have a criminal record. It's just an absolutely suspended sentence, no punishment whatsoever. This is catch and release policing and prosecution at its absolute worst. This is a guy who should have been thrown into prison. This is a guy who should have been thrown out of the country. If our federal law enforcement system was functioning adequately, if DHS was doing their job right, he would have been deported. If our state courts had been doing their job right, this guy would have been in prison. And instead, he was out on the streets with tragic consequences yesterday morning.
Gosh, and now Officer Lee's life is lost because of it. Every single time we have an instance where somebody's life is lost, brutally taken in many cases, and it comes back to the same question, is why are these people here? And then you add on, okay, so they're here. But while they were here, we, for whatever reason, continue to ignore the legal system and the laws that are in place, and these people continue to get away with absolutely heinous, ridiculous acts. How do we explain this?
Yeah, look, this Chavez Rodriguez guy, you know, folks on the left love to say that illegal immigrants are just coming here to work. They're just here for economic reasons. They just want to be part of the community and they contribute to the community. That's a general statement. Here we have a specific case. And in this specific case, this guy, Chavez Rodriguez, entered the country illegally, was bonded out, then committed heinous crimes while he was here, and yet was allowed to remain in this country. That, by anybody's standard, is an absolute failure of the system. It's an absolute failure of our system of law enforcement, of our system of immigration enforcement. And in this case, that's had absolutely tragic consequences.
So the failure seems, Will, like it's at pretty much every level of government. Yeah. We have missed the opportunity to protect American citizens and the best of us, the people who wear the uniform and put themselves in harm's way. I mean, here we have an instance of a police officer doing their job, and I mean, a somewhat mundane part of their job, putting out traffic cones. This wasn't a thing where, you know, I'm putting this in air quotes, it wasn't a risky endeavor like going into somebody's home to try to create security in a very tenuous situation. It just shows that every time a uniform is put on by a police officer, that they are putting themselves in the line of danger in order to protect those among us in our community. And when you add in all of these extra factors where we look the other way, I mean, isn't that what we're doing? Aren't we just looking the other way? This is a choice. To treat somebody like Chavez Rodriguez the way we're treating him. It's an active, we're participating in the system. It's not just happening. It's intentional.
Yeah, I think those are two very important points. First of all, every time a police officer puts on their uniform, every time they're out responding to calls, they are putting themselves in harm's way to protect all of us. And I think the absolute least that we owe to those police officers is making sure that our system of justice, our court system, our political system is set up to ensure that their hard work is responded to and is dealt with. In this case, we have a situation where police back in 2020, in October of 2020, did everything right, arrested a guy who was a danger to the community, who was a menace to the community, who'd committed terrible crimes. They got him into custody. And then our court system and our prosecutors failed to adequately punish this guy, failed to adequately ensure that he wasn't going to be able to go right back out on the streets and do the exact same garbage over again. And that's what we see here. This is a guy with a history of driving drunk, with a history of violence. He's an illegal immigrant. He should not have been in the country. He should certainly not have been free on the streets with no criminal record after what he did previously. And to me, that's just an abject failure of the system. And if I were a police officer today on the streets of St. Louis, I would be absolutely furious at how the system failed in this case and ultimately failed Officer Lee.
It's easy to, you know, transition this into like a federal government presidential election border security conversation, and that is a warranted conversation. But there are, as you pointed out, state issues, local issues that are in play as well. What immediate changes need to take place in order to ensure that these types of things don't happen again?
So back in 2020, this guy, Chavez Rodriguez, beats up his girlfriend and then, you know, goes fleeing with a small child in the car while he's drunk. He gets bonded out 2 days after he's arrested. He's a danger to the community. He's an illegal immigrant, which means he's a flight risk. Why was he bonded out? He should have been detained pre-trial in light of the seriousness of the crimes that he had committed and in light of the seriousness of the situation that he'd created.
Do you know what jurisdiction he was?
It was in St. Charles. The case was, I believe, in St. Peter's, but it was St. Charles courts. He gets bonded out immediately, and then his case drags for a year and a half. And instead of throwing the book at this guy and making sure that he serves real time for a domestic assault second for serious crimes that he committed, instead of throwing the book at him, prosecutor lets him take an SIS plea. That means that if he walks down his probation, he doesn't even have a criminal record at the end of it. I mean, to me, that's just an abject failure of the system here. And it's made all the more so by the fact that this guy was illegally in the country. I don't know why he wasn't detained. I don't know why he wasn't turned over for deportation, why he wasn't kicked out of the country, and why he was allowed to remain in the community. Certainly in light of the fact that even after coming to this country illegally, he's flagrantly violating the law. This guy's lost his right to stay here. He should not have been on the streets.
Yeah, absolutely. And now we have lost life over it, his presence here, and the continuation of his incredibly irresponsible decisions that affect other people. And now it's going to affect everybody who loved and knew Officer David Lee, who was 44 years old, who was struck by him on Interstate 70. I mean, the people who are going to be affected in continuation with these types of decisions, they're listening to this show right now. You're talking about St. Peter's, you're talking about St. Yep. Charles. I mean, if I'm living in those areas, I'm looking around for, like, who do I need to talk to? Who do I need to fire and elect somebody else? Where do I go to make sure that people understand that in our community, we want it to be safe and secure, and when these bad guys show up, we want law and order to do what it's supposed to do, which is to keep the bad guys from hurting the good guys.
Yeah, look, call your state legislators, call statewide office holders, call the people with political power in this state, and tell them that you want bail reform, that you want truth in sentencing laws, that this endless revolving cycle of suspended sentence after suspended sentence after suspended sentence, which allows some of the most violent criminals in our communities to remain on the streets for years and years and years, it has to stop. This is a symptom of a much bigger problem. That problem is that we here in Missouri do not take violent crime seriously from a public policy perspective, and that has to change if the state's going to have a bright future.
So sad. It's so sad. One of these stories after the next where, you know, if it's important to identify the fact that if Officer Lee were hit by anybody who was driving under the influence, that the tragedy of his lost life is no greater or less. I mean, the loss of this life while this man was serving is of paramount importance for the people of this community to respect and to be grateful for and to pray for this family. But when you add in the detail of this person being here illegally with a long history of criminal activity, it's like if we're going to try to keep crime at a bare minimum, you're never going to eliminate it. But if you're going to live in a safe and secure society, shouldn't you be able to rely on when we catch the bad guys doing bad things that we do something about it? And there's just a climate. I mean, we're talking about 2020. I mean, that means that he came to this country. If he came here in 2020 or before then he probably came over when Donald Trump was the president. So it's not like you can throw this on the president's responsibility to completely close down the borders, but it's just proof that it's always been a problem. It needs to be addressed. It can't be ignored. And when we ignore it, as we have for the last 3.5 years, we're going to have more Officer David Lees. And they might not be police officers. They might be kids.
And to me, the great failure here is I don't know how this guy showed up to the country. I don't know what circumstance got him here in the first place. But I do know that by 2022, when he's pleading guilty to serious felony offenses that have elements of violence, there's absolutely no excuse for allowing an illegal immigrant with that sort of a profile to remain on the streets and to remain in the country.
Yeah.
And that's a failure of federal law enforcement. I think that's a failure of our local courts and our local law enforcement system. It's a real, real problem. I obviously have very strong views about the presidential election. More than that, though, I have very, very strong views about law and order and the need for the law to be upheld and enforced. And in this case, as with so many others involving illegal immigrants that we've seen around the country, the law quite simply is not being enforced, and that needs to change.
I completely agree with you. We've got Will Scharf in studio with us. He's a former federal prosecutor for the Eastern District of Missouri. He knows a bit about prosecuting crime. He's also Donald Trump's attorney. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you about a few things. The first of them being the result of the second shooter at Donald Trump on the golf course. Find out that he is not going to be able to get out of jail while they continue to probably levy even more drastic charges at him. We'll get Will Scharf's reaction to that. And we're also going to ask Will Scharf about all of the legal challenges now facing P. Diddy. We want to know from you on the Annie Fry YouTube channel, what did P. Diddy do? And do you want to know? If you go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel, you can tell us yes or no if you want to know and how much you want to know. We'll be right back with more Will Scharf in studio next. We're going to peel it up to the 11th Circuit. She just threw it out. The 11th Circuit is conservative, and thank God so is the current Supreme Court. They're not going to tolerate that nonsense.
So Megyn Kelly slicing and dicing on the All In podcast. The question that was posed to her was, I don't know, do you know all, you know the people on the All In podcast, Brad? Are you familiar with
No, I actually haven't watched the All In podcast.
I don't know anything about it, but it's apparently
I like the Full Send podcast with the Nelk boys better. It's a little more Gen Z, a little more fun.
The question that was posed to her is like, listen, he's about to go 5 for 5 on convictions. Are you, if Trump goes 5 for 5 in being convicted in all of these different cases, are you still going to call it lawfare? And that was her response. Well, we've got one of Donald Trump's attorneys in the studio with us. So I thought I'd put the ball on the tee there for Will Scharf to react to what Megyn Kelly said. And this very common leftist talking point about how Donald Trump is a convicted rapist and he has all of these terrible, terrible thing, a convicted felon. Megyn Kelly took a stab at there, did a pretty good job. What do you think about what she said and the constant political pressure?
Yeah, I think Megyn Kelly's right on. I mean, she really did lay out what we're facing here, which is a concerted weaponization of the legal system to pursue President Trump for fundamentally political reasons. And the fact that a New York jury returned a guilty verdict in a case doesn't change the basic fact that the reason that that case was brought was political, that the actors who brought that case were acting out of political motives, and that that should offend all Americans of all political stripes, because that's banana republic stuff. We don't do that in America. In terms of what's actually going on with all the cases, in that Megyn Kelly clip, she laid it out pretty clearly. I mean, the prosecutions are falling apart under their own weight. Even that New York jury verdict is not going to stand up. Florida's been dismissed. Georgia's going to be dismissed. DC's going nowhere fast. On the civil side, we actually have oral argument in an appeal of the New York AG case. That's the Tish James case, $460 million verdict. That's this Thursday in New York. Crucially, Judge Engoron, you know, this sort of traffic court judge who somehow had this case in New York, you know, he ignored binding rulings from the New York Appellate Division on statute of limitations issues, on other issues that would have essentially resolved a vast majority of this case if he had just listened to binding authority. So we have very strong grounds of appeal, grounds for appeal in that case. And it's also just worth noting again, as Megyn Kelly said in that clip, that there was no harmed party here, that case that Tish James brought is about loans that were made to President Trump's businesses by Deutsche Bank, by a number of other commercial lenders. Those lenders all testified for President Trump, saying these were great loans. They were paid on time. We would do business with him again. He was a whale of a client. We were happy to have his business. I mean, there was no harmed party here. So what Tish James is basically saying is that her judgment should be substituted for that of President Trump and that of these sophisticated commercial parties in terms of assessing the value of President Trump's assets that were placed as collateral or the sort of statements of financial condition that were provided during these loans. And that's led to absurd results. You know, they said that Mar-a-Lago is worth $18 million. I mean, there are like, you know, single car garages in Palm Beach that are probably worth $18 million. This is like one of the most iconic properties in the world. Doral, which is, you know, one of the greatest golf properties in the world, they undervalued by like a factor of 10. I mean, it's just it's patently absurd. But again, nobody was hurt. There was no damaged party. There's no actual evidence that anything that President Trump did was really dishonest or fraudulent in any way at all. And yet they're trying to hit him for almost $500 million in fines. It's just it's blatantly un-American. It's a blatant abuse of our legal system. And it's got to stop.
Yeah, I think it's very well said by both Megyn Kelly and Will Scharf in studio with us now. I wanted to get your perspective as somebody who knows Donald Trump personally on the fact that there have been two attempts on his life. One of them struck him in the ear. And for some reason, it's one of the most baffling things to me of the people on the left, the people who are so obsessed with Donald Trump
politically. Obsessed. They're like, it just hit his ear. I'm like, do you know where your ear is? It is attached to your head, which is holding your brain. I mean, he was centimeters away from, I mean, less than that, death. And it was just a matter of a head turn that saved his life. And now we have a second person who wanted to end his life, Ryan Ruth, who today has been informed in court that he is going to remain in jail. I just want to know what your thoughts are. Anywhere you want to talk about this issue with the Secret Service, the security that is being provided to Donald Trump, Donald Trump's ability to continue campaigning throughout the threats on his life, and how it's affecting what might happen in 43 days when the election is over.
Yeah, look, we've had in the last 2 months, little more than 2 months, two of the most serious attempted assassinations of a president or presidential candidate in modern American history. You have to go back to 1981 with Ronald Reagan to find something that comes close to what we've seen twice now in 2 months. I think there's a reason for that. I think that the way that the left has heated up the rhetoric against President Trump for years and years and years, the fact that you have Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris saying over and over and over again that he is a threat to democracy, that he's the next Hitler, that he's a fascist, that he's a racist, that he's a bigot. They say this stuff over and over and over again. And words have impact and words have meaning. And what they've done is they've spun up a segment of their base who actually believes what they're saying, who actually believe that Donald Trump is the next Hitler, even though that's patently absurd. And these crazies, like this guy down in Florida, are going to jump through any hoop and go to any end to prevent Donald Trump from getting back to the White House, where I believe he belongs. And that is just a very scary dynamic that we're living through right now. So I think, obviously, the Secret Service need more resources. They need to be doing a much better job of protecting President Trump. They need more resources to protect him better. Yeah. I think the actual agents around him, I think they've done a pretty good job. They just need a lot more in the way of that. And then on top of that, I think we need folks on the left to actually finally have a moment of introspection and realize what they're doing, which is just wrong. That for narrow political purposes, they've turned a segment of our country into just these sort of rabid lunatics who don't have a firm grasp on reality anymore. And I think that's a real problem.
So my question is this, Will. We've from the beginning of the time that you've joined us today, we've talked about failures in the Justice Department. Failures in the Justice Department, we see weaponization in the Justice Department, and now we're looking at failures in Secret Service. You said you have a very big interest in Donald Trump getting reelected. My question is whenever Donald Trump gets reelected, what can he do to restore faith in the justice system? Because I think right now it's very low.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think when you look at the key agencies here, the Department of Justice, the Department of Homeland Security, the American people for the last 4 years have seen these agencies used as a political tool by Joe Biden, by Merrick Garland, by the people around them. And so it's understandable that we've lost faith in them. You know, when you see the powers of the Department of Justice, the FBI, being used to go after, school parents who are protesting at school board meetings. When you see federal charges being thrown at people who are peacefully protesting outside abortion clinics, and yet Antifa militants are allowed to burn down American cities without any consequences. I mean, obviously, the American people are going to lose faith in the institutions that have been a part of that dynamic. I think part of the problem is leadership. I hope to God President Trump wins. I hope to God he puts great people in charge of these departments. But part of it's a cultural problem in these departments where I think they've been focused on the wrong things for so long that it's going to be difficult to get them to focus on the right things. But we've got to take things step by step, and we've got to start breaking things down and hopefully building them back up again.
I don't know how President Trump is going to fix all the things he needs to fix, but I know that he's got a plan going in. I know that he has talked a lot about being prepared for a second term in a way that he could never have been prepared for his first term, because when you're an outsider and you're coming in, you by definition don't know the inner workings of how things, the bureaucracy operates. But now that he does know how to get stuff done and he does have people who he's leaning on to help advise him, the Justice Department has got to be at the top of
remaking and reshaping in order to make sure that the American people know that that justice is truly blind, and what we continue to hear from politicians, no one is above the law. All right. You said you could say one more segment, right?
Yeah, sure. I would say that, you know, for our listeners, the next head of DOJ might be a very familiar figure. A lot of press reports are saying
you?
That... No, Eric Schmidt.
Oh, that would be cool.
Senator Eric Schmidt is apparently on top of the list. That's been publicly reported.
Wow.
And I think he'd do an outstanding job. So
we love Eric Schmidt on this show. Absolutely. That would be fantastic. Oh, man, that would be so fun. Let me just sit here and think about that for a second. Whew, I like it. We want to talk to you about P. Diddy.
Let's do it.
We stay for one more segment?
Absolutely.
Okay.
For P. Diddy, another segment. Absolutely.
Yeah, I hear he gets what he wants most times. but we want to know more about that. And we're going to talk about it when we come back. What do we know about what he's been charged with so far? Is there more coming? Are more people connected? Is it the same as Epstein? I have so many questions. I'm going to ask as many of them as I can from Will when we return. Will Scharf in studio with us, a former federal prosecutor for the Eastern District of Missouri, Donald Trump attorney, and friend of the Annie Frye Show. We're grateful to have him in the studio. Don't go away. If you got questions, put them in the Annie Frye YouTube chat. More with Will when we come back.
Annie Frye Show.
Well, speaking of T-R-O-U-B-L-E, let's talk about P. Diddy, because I'm very interested in this story. The connections that P. Diddy has in Hollywood, I don't know if they're limited. It feels like he's got a connection to everybody who's in Hollywood. And we've been told that he's been put on suicide watch, and he's in one of the, like, worst places in detention right now in New York that you can be. And I asked Will, I'm like, can we talk about this? And he said, we can. So Will, what do you know?
So P. Diddy is, from a purely legal perspective, an absolutely fascinating character. P. Diddy, as many of your listeners probably know, emerges on the New York hip hop scene starting really in 1993. He makes it big, producing Notorious B.I.G., starts Bad Boy Records, becomes one of the iconic producers on the East Coast during the East Coast-West Coast rap feud of the 1990s. Basically, from the time he first came on the scene, P. Diddy has had a legal cloud hanging over his head. He is accused of being one of the people who conspires to have Tupac Shakur killed after Tupac's seminal diss track, Hit Him Up, trashes Bad Boy Records, P. Diddy's record label. In 1999, I think it was, he is then arrested after a nightclub altercation. He's in a nightclub with Jennifer Lopez and the rapper Shine. Words are exchanged, fists fly, guns are found. He's defended at trial in New York by Johnny Cochran, famous obviously for defending O.J. Simpson, and Ben Braffman, probably the greatest defense attorney in New York history, and ends up walking, although Shine goes to prison for, I think, illegal gun possession charges. So P. Diddy is a guy who for years and years and years, I can keep going on in this vein, has been around legal trouble, but has never actually appeared to be too threatened by it, that he's always skated by, he's always gotten out of things. They've had out-of-court settlements with people who have accused him of different things. He's paid a lot of money over the years to a lot of people, but he's never really been in the kind of trouble he's in now. He's been indicted in federal court with a 3-count indictment. Granted, these are allegations. They have not yet been proven in court. But what the indictment alleges is that P. Diddy, going back to 2008, has engaged in essentially a criminal conspiracy with a number of people who work for him and are in his world, where they host these weird sex parties called freakout parties that involve transporting male and female prostitutes across state lines, that involve pressuring, coercing, and threatening women into participating in these weird sex parties against their will. P. Diddy has been charged with 1 count of conspiracy, 1 count of sex trafficking, and then 1 count of transportation of a prostitute across state lines, essentially. But the actual allegations in the indictment are that this was a very well-established conspiracy, essentially, that he and his compatriots had been doing this for years, that they're transporting hookers and strippers and women all over the place, that they're threatening people, they're threatening people's jobs, they're threatening people with violence, there's guns involved, there's a ton of drugs involved. When they raid his apartment, they find, like, gallons and gallons of baby oil. This is, like, really, really weird stuff.
Really, really weird stuff.
And I would not want to be P. Diddy right now, is all I'll say.
So, There's a lot of connections in the chatter that's out there about P. Diddy and Epstein. Are these? Is there a connection in a Kamala Harris Venn diagram of sense that where these cases are connected, or is that just
so?
It's weird.
I think there is, in a sense, that, you know, one of the most striking things about Epstein was, despite the fact that he was doing all of this disgusting stuff in large part in plain view, he had incredible access to celebrities and to prominent people and to political A-listers. I think with Diddy, you see exactly the same dynamic, where he hosted for years in the Hamptons this thing called the White Party, which was like a place that celebrities had to be seen at, and every actor and every person was going to these parties that P. Diddy was throwing that apparently were a little crazier than folks were admitting publicly. P. Diddy has been around politics. He's been around politicians. He's been around New York forever. His circle is very, very wide, similarly to how wide Epstein's was. And my guess is that if the full story of everybody who's been involved in these weird sex parties, if that were to ever come out, if Diddy's black book were to ever be published the way that we've, you know, often called for Epstein's black book to be published, I think you'd see a lot of surprising names on there, including potentially political names.
The YouTube poll for today, if you haven't visited us on the YouTube live broadcast, in the live chat portion, you can tell us if you want to know about what P. Diddy did. You want to know, yes, you want to know all of it, yes, but the bare minimum, or no, you don't want to know, or no, you don't care. I'm surprised right now about how many people have voted that they don't care. Is there a reason why what P. Diddy has done so far should be the concern of the average American citizen and voter?
So I'd say a couple things to that. First of all, I'm just fascinated by this because you've got this guy who has been a pop culture institution since I was a little kid, like since the 1990s. He's been around forever. The indictment alleges that this scheme started in 2008. So for the better part of two decades, he's been engaged in, you know, widespread sex trafficking. That's just crazy. It's crazy that this hasn't come out before now. It's crazy that he hasn't been held accountable before now. I think when we talk about the justice system and there being this sort of two-tiered system of justice, where particularly wealthy people with power and political access and all that are allowed to walk while other people aren't, I think that's really true of P. Diddy when you look at his whole history with this endless string of accusations and, you know, incidents and just everything that's happened to him. He always seems to be one step ahead of the law until now. And I find that interesting. And then as we were getting at just a minute ago, I think it's interesting to see who else ends up getting wrapped up in this. I mean, Diddy's been around for long enough that if you're a celebrity, if you're somebody in New York, you've probably been pictured with him. You've probably hung out with him. You may have even attended one of his parties. Let's see what the next couple weeks have in store for us and along those lines.
Okay, so
Ryan starts this question with okay.
You mentioned Epstein. Now, buckle thank up. You for doing that, because now I have a little bit of a segue, because I was talking with Mark Cox this morning. And I said I have a theory about this, and I need you to sort of give me the details to know whether this has any merit at all. So Epstein, we know nothing happened to anybody.
Theory?
Yeah, yeah. Nothing happened to anybody in his orbit. It's all just been completely shut down. The whole system rallied around him, basically. He got offed, and then everybody else has skated, essentially. My theory is that they're doing this to P. Diddy right now. They're bringing him in. They're going to try to sort of rally around him because they know they couldn't avoid it forever. They're going to do it now because they know that, hey, maybe in a few months, Donald Trump would remake the entire Justice Department. Let's get this thing going now so that we can rally the troops, minimize the damage, and make sure nothing happens. My question for you is, are these the same people in charge of the Epstein stuff that are going after P. Diddy right now?
So I'll say this. There is, if your scenario is true, if this is about kind of a preemptive cover-up of P. Diddy in advance of Trump remaking the Department of Justice and bringing in much more serious people, which I obviously hope that he does, then the tell will be a rapid plea agreement, that this will get resolved very quickly as opposed to it dragging for many months as a case like this normally would. So far, P. Diddy's lawyers have been saying the opposite. They're saying that this is about consensual relationships with women. The implication is that women are chasing P. Diddy around because he's famous and rich and a celebrity and all that, and that they were voluntarily doing all this gross stuff with baby oil and whatever else. So far, that's the line out of Camp Diddy. If that line quickly
that's
changes...
That's different than Camp David?
Yeah, a little bit. But maybe...
Closer to Camp Lejeune.
So if that line starts to change...
Maybe not.
If we see them coming to terms with these charges and a negotiated plea, which I don't think is going to happen, but that would certainly be an indication that, what you're saying is true. I mean, I think that when you look at the Epstein, I think Epstein was killed. I think that the situation there is just so suspicious. And as you said, I think folks in DOJ just, they didn't want to admit that this crazy thing had happened there.
There are a lot of videotapes. That's what we understand. P. Diddy had cameras everywhere. So the story that is being told is that he would have very high profile people that were very powerful, wealthy people on tape doing things that you would not want to be seen in public doing on tape. It gave him a specific kind of power. Is there any right for the American public to see those tapes?
If this case were to go to trial, a lot of that presumably would have to come into evidence.
If it comes into evidence, does that mean it's public?
It's a public record. I mean, you, some of it could be submitted under seal because you need to protect the privacy rights of third parties. But I would hope that in something like this with a real public interest like that, if there are people in public life in America who have that sort of compromising material out there on them, I think there is probably a right for the public to know that. I mean, that's really scary stuff, the same way it was with Epstein. You know, what did Epstein have on Bill Gates? What did he have on Bill Clinton? What did he have on all these people? We've never really gotten to the bottom of that, and I would hate to see another scandal like that brushed under the rug.
Does information regarding the Epstein stuff exist in a place that the president has access to it and could reveal it?
My suspicion is that DOJ's files, you know, based on stuff that was confiscated from his house when they arrested him, confiscated from his plane. But my guess is that DOJ has a ton of information on Epstein that's never been publicly aired because he never went to trial. But that's supposition on my part. I've obviously never seen anything like that. And we may never know.
Association with Epstein, association with Diddy is not, it's not, you're not complicit just by having been to a party, which is where I think that in a lot of these cases, I would want information to come out if I had an association, like an actual truly business professional association with either of those individuals on an up and up thing. But also there are the photograph of me being at a party where maybe I was at a party but didn't participate in anything that was illegal.
Yeah, I mean, if you're just showing up to a dinner at Epstein's house, you know, before Epstein had ever been prosecuted for anything, maybe there's some weird art around there. And, you know, there seem to be a lot of young girls. You probably don't want to come back a second time. And like, this is sort of a weird situation. But you had people who were flying off to his islands who, if the allegations are true, were participating in some of his most heinous crimes. And that puts them in a very different category. I think the same would be true with P. Diddy, that the fact that you went to a rapper's party doesn't make you guilty of a serious crime. But if you're engaged in some of the sort of behavior that's alleged in this indictment, if you're threatening women, if you're dealing with all this sort of seamy enterprise that he apparently set up, I mean, that's some pretty bad stuff. And I think we're going to learn a lot more in the next couple weeks and months.
I am ready for unfettered access to truth because we have had everything guarded and handled for us for so long that I'm interested in truth. Will Scharf,
absolutely.
It is always a pleasure. Come back soon.
Love being with you guys.
How
Thanks so
tomorrow?
Much for having me.
Thank you, Will. 2 o'clock hour of the Annie Fry Show. Next, don't go away.